for needing to eat them. Likewise, we could appreciate and live with plants and all creatures while limiting our numbers and impacts, not just to the maximum sustainable level, but to a low, sane number of human beings taking little as they travel through a short time of existence. It may sound like a dream vision of living well with nature, but we do not know enough to say this is impossible. All of our ancestors lived sustainably with nature before us. That may be our actual character, rather than a cancerous plague image of the last days of living. We may return to one strange species among many, rather than self-appointed monarchs and Cali destroyers. We may return to humble living. Even though that sounds impossibly distant, things may be closer than they appear in the rear-view mirror. Some academics and activists are already working on various lifeboat responses like managed retreat. This June, Columbia University will hold its recurring event, At What Point? Managed Retreat. The transition town movement is quieter but still going. Others developed the Future of Humanity Institute and various attempts at deep time think tanks to see a way ahead. Check out the new report, Future Proof. These may be the first steps towards surviving the future we made. We may actually prepare enough to keep learning and innovation alive, as I said, avoiding another dark age, which some call the delightenment instead of the enlightenment. I think that was Professor Bill Rees, who called it the delightenment. But Nick Bostrom and Tony Ord, that's what this crowd is about, avoiding that loss of knowledge, and many others are working on this in less well-known ways. Human readiness and prepared tools may make the journey less ugly, at least for some people. Humans may respond better than our strong pessimism suggests. Who knows? We may develop many more positive social traits and even the ability to be happier with less. Nobody can guarantee that, but nobody can guarantee we go out in brutish violence either. We don't know. It is also possible civilization and the economy will shift towards rewarding caregivers. Volunteer aid is already badly needed, even before we finally recognize the wave of COVID disability. Some people devote their lives to helping the victims of disease and climate change, whether humans, animals, or plants. The new generation could be the greatest public service ever seen. Just as millions of men marched off to their deaths in war, millions of people of all sexes may go to help. That alone could lift up a better humanity. That could be a gift out of the tragic times.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Anybody can sell a novel or a podcast about The Road or The Lord of the Flies, but the future may be less eye-catching and at least better than the worst version of humanity. Doomery is understandable given the facts, but doomer absolutists have overreached. There is no certainty how this will all turn out. Anyone who says they are certain have fallen back into self-delusion. The physics of climate, the operations of microbial threats, these things may be known, but the human response is not. The last time we tried for realistic hope, it was on Radio EcoShock with guest Thomas Homer Dixon. I got some critical emails you want to know. Apparently hope has become a dirty four-letter word. It's because hope has been so badly abused by the apologists and the green mass marketers. But there is a way things could change more rapidly than we currently imagine in society without being a false daydream. It is just a chance, but still a chance we may avoid the worst future. On this show, scientists like Tim Linton in the UK or Johan Rockström in Stockholm work through climate tipping points. And then they hope for social tipping points, and there has been more work on that in places like Oxford and Cambridge. History shows a few instances of revolution, times of sudden social rearrangement. Institutions and foundational ideals fall, to be replaced by the new. A common example, sure, it's the French Revolution of 1789. The baby boom generation hoped the year 1968 would break down the walls of war, hate, and injustice. They didn't, but it was a start. The Soviet Union looked like an impregnable fortress until it suddenly collapsed in 1991. Societies can change rapidly. We need this one to change quickly, away from fossil fuels, but not just that, from the destruction of nature. And that includes destroying each other, because look, we too are gifts of nature. There is a strong new voice on this front. I'm talking about Todd Rose with his 2022 book, Collective Illusions, Conformity, Complicity, and the Science of Why We Make Bad Decisions. Canadian climate scientist Paul Beckwith brought this book to my attention in his recent YouTube video. Like me, and probably you, Paul has come to realize the big threat to our continued happiness and existence is not because we lack science or technology. We know, and we know how. We are missing something, something about ourselves. We need to solve the communal code in humans that leads to destruction. Todd Rose points to collective illusions. Think of medieval people burning women said to be witches. That horrible mass delusion infected everyone from royalty down through the village blacksmith. It was led by a male-dominated church that was supposed to protect humanity from our worst impulses. Later, allegedly in the modern age, Germans led mass slavery and execution of the Jews. It was all a horrible collective illusion. We desperately need to find out how malcoding of human minds develops and how to heal it. In the tradition of Radio EcoShock, we should let author Todd Rose speak for himself. Todd was a psychologist at Harvard, leading projects investigating individuality and the mind. He is now co-founder and president of something called Populous, a Boston-based think tank. Rose became a best-selling author with his 2015 book, The End of Average, How We Succeed in a World That Values Sameness. Here are a couple of excerpts from Todd's Big Think series on YouTube. This one is called Psychologist Debunks 8 Myths of Mass Scale.
In a perfect world, our public selves, the way I behave, the way I speak, the things I do, are the same as our private selves. At its best, public opinion holds a mirror to us and it reflects exactly who we are. What collective illusions do to that relationship is turn it into a funhouse of mirrors, which is fatal to free society. Collective illusions are situations where most people in a group go along with a view they don't agree with because they incorrectly believe that most people agree with it. It's not just that we're misreading a few people, it is that the majority thinks the majority believes something that they don't. We are all part of creating and sustaining the illusion. We've known about collective illusions for over 100 years. But here's the thing. Our cultural and technological conditions have changed to make creating and sustaining collective illusions so easy that they've just proliferated at a scale we've never seen before in history. We have found them almost everywhere we look, from the kind of lives we want to live, to the country we want to live in, to the way we want to treat each other, and even what we expect out of our institutions. And our job is to dismantle them so that when we see ourselves in public opinion, we are seeing ourselves for who we really are. If you create the enabling conditions that allow everyday people to reveal who they really are to each other, social change can happen at a scale and pace that would otherwise seem unimaginable. And here's how we do that. My think tank Populous studies collective illusions and uses what we call private opinion methods, which are just methods that help reveal people's private views free of social pressure and other distorting influences on public opinion. And every question we ever ask, we always ask what the individual thinks and what they believe most people would say to that question. And that combination of methods helps surface collective illusions all across society. We have found them almost everywhere we look, from the kind of lives we want to live, to the country we want to live in, to the way we want to treat each other, and even what we expect out of our institutions, from education to the workplace. The most damaging consequence is that an illusion in one generation tends to become the private opinion of the next generation. One of the most important collective illusions we've ever discovered has to do with the way that people define a successful life. It turns out that the vast majority of the American public believes that most people in the country care about wealth, status, power, when in fact, the opposite is true. The vast majority of the American public are focused on a more personal fulfillment orientation. But our kids are paying an incredible price because they do not understand that this is an illusion. They try to chase fame because they believe that's what other people will recognize as success. So if we do nothing about collective illusions now, our silence will virtually guarantee that our children and our grandchildren will have this view as their private opinion. We've known about collective illusions for over 100 years. And up until the last, say, 20 years, you could have probably counted on two hands and two feet the number of serious societal and collective illusions that had existed. Since then, that number has exploded. They affect society as a whole, but we are all part of creating and sustaining the illusions. Even when we fundamentally end up disagreeing, a truthful disagreement is always better than a collective illusion. Being aware that collective illusions exist is the starting point. The only way to discover those is the same way that you actually dismantle them. You gotta have conversations. You gotta talk to each other. If you understand that fact, and you create the enabling conditions that allow everyday people to reveal who they really are to each other, these illusions can crumble in a hurry, and social change can happen at a scale and pace that would otherwise seem unimaginable. Given the profound lack of trust in society today, we often look for the cause of that in each other. I don't believe that's true. Frederick Taylor is probably the most important person that most people have never heard of. Over 100 years ago, he wrote a book called Scientific Management, which they were about his ideas about how you create a productive economy. And he felt like the biggest problem in society was that we weren't very efficient. And so scientific management literally said, wait, the first thing you gotta stop doing is trusting people. He went about implementing a systems first approach to a top-down society governed by managers. In fact, he invented the term manager, and he made us all cogs where the system matters most. Because of the way our institutions treat us, by removing choice from us and fundamentally treating us as untrustworthy, we have come to see each other through that lens. But here's the thing. When you actually study honesty and trustworthiness, what you find over and over again is that the vast majority of people are, in fact, trustworthy. One of my favorite studies, it's a pretty famous German study. Here's what they did. They literally just randomly called people and said that there was a contest going on, and all they needed to do was flip a coin themselves. And if it landed on tails, they got a gift certificate. If it landed on heads, they got nothing. Now, what's important is nobody knows how the coin lands except for the person on the phone. So you would have expected everybody says tails, takes the gift certificate, and the aggregate results are like, well, it's 100% tails. Who would have thought, right? It's not what happened. It was almost 50-50 heads or tails. And in fact, it was slightly more in favor of heads, which tells me most people, if not all people, were telling the truth about how the coin landed when no one else could possibly have known. So it matters to us, not just that we are trustworthy, but that we are viewed that way. And yet we live in a society where our institutions continue to remind us that this is not true, that we are in some way untrustworthy. We can only interact with each other in one of two ways. We can trust people to make choices for themselves, or we can control those choices for them. It is a fundamental tenet of democracy that institutions serve people. But ever since Frederick Taylor, we have flipped that relationship. As a free people in a free society, it is unacceptable that our public institutions treat the people as distrustful. Because now we know that whatever efficiency you get from that top-down control model, the consequences in terms of human dignity and social trust are so damaging that that trade-off is not worth it. What we need is to trust communities to make decisions for themselves, trust families to make decisions for themselves, trust people to. If you want a trusting society, work to dislodge this top-down view of our institutions and give more power to people. Insist that our institutions treat the public with trust. But when we engage online, we tend to think that we're interacting with a reasonable sample of the actual population. But it's not true. Close to 80% of all content on social media is generated by about 10% of the users. That 10% tends to be extreme on most social issues. They are the vocal fringe. When you have a vocal minority that is perceived as the majority, critical mass of us will actually either self-silence or we will actually go along to get along, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. This is how collective illusions form. It's not terribly surprising that some of the first people to start to use these tools to manipulate were leaders who need consensus to conserve power.
Venezuela no le temblará el pulso para combatir a los grupos terroristas.
An example of this is Nicolas Maduro, the leader of Venezuela. For a long time, it looked like on social media that he had a pretty good beat on the consensus of the people that he led. So almost everything that he would say, stories that were written about him that were positive, would be retweeted and shared, and it looked like this represented some kind of consensus. But it turned out a significant percentage of his so-called followers were actually what we call social bots. These are fake accounts that only exist to retweet anything positive about him or that he said, and importantly, to attack the opposition. When Twitter banned them, the real consensus was with the opposition. And that started to emerge and be retweeted as more and more people recognized that it was okay to say what they actually thought. Social media is a free-for-all in terms of who can shout the loudest and who can silence other people in the name of masquerading as a majority and manufacturing collective illusions. Your willingness to conform and your unwillingness to challenge what you think the group believes will actually contribute to leading the group astray. The solution to our online life is to get offline once in a while. The most important thing you can do is continue to have conversations with your family, with your neighbors, with your community. Don't carry that distortion over into the way you treat people in real life.
That was psychologist and mind scientist Todd Rose explaining just some of his latest book, Collective Illusions. As you heard, Rose explains why humans could change more rapidly than we imagine. We have that demonstrated capacity. Worse yet, for the absolute doomers, Rose finds most humans have a better nature than we generally think they do. Todd's story about honesty and that telephone study reflects what I have experienced so often. Most of the people I met on the road, in big cities, and at the fringes in the wilderness, they were good at heart, even when there was little reward for it. It is no longer fashionable to talk like this, but Todd Rose finds, and validates it in various tests, that most humans try for good even while they despair about others. I don't know if that basic goodness can survive the new hate business online and false personalities in cyberspace, but the better side of people might still win. Even you doubters cannot prove that evil will triumph in coming years. The only honest answer is, no one knows. One thing we do know, in almost every scenario, the world will get hotter if we keep increasing greenhouse gases. There are 1,000 ramifications to that, as you know, whole chains of change attached to that climate shift. Underlying them all, more heat, more energy on this planet. As you know, scientists try to estimate the amount of warming for an arbitrary benchmark, a doubling of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere compared to pre-industrial times. They call this equilibrium climate sensitivity. And it's important because it shows us how much warming we should expect for the greenhouse gases we're putting up there. The latest AR6 report says, quote, "The very likely range of equilibrium climate sensitivity is between 2 degrees C, high confidence, and 5 degrees C, medium confidence. The AR6 assessed best estimate is 3 degrees C, with a likely range of 2.5 C to 4 degrees C, high confidence," end quote, from the IPCC. Well, I see at least two problems here. First, the untrained public might read equilibrium as though Earth reaches some kind of climate balance point when CO2 reaches the doubling point. That would be somewhere around 560 parts per million carbon dioxide, compared to about 420 when I broadcast this. And it's much lower if we add in all the greenhouse gases like nitrous oxide and methane. This is another case where the scientific terminology is misleading for the non-scientist. There is no resting point, or equilibrium, as long as more greenhouse gases enter the atmosphere, and maybe even after that. Whether it's human fossil fuels, or from land use, or even from more natural sources like, methane from thawing permafrost or hotter tropical bogs. The second thing is the human mind is looking for a hard number to grasp. That's what we all want. The AR6 report settles on 3 degrees C of global average warming at the doubling point. We know from past experience with almost every IPCC report, their choices and predictions are almost always too low. They are institutionally conservative. Scientists are careful, and the report has to get approval from 190 governments, and some of those are great big fossil fuel producers like Saudi Arabia, Norway, and the United States. But the IPCC just said, with medium confidence, the world could be 5 degrees C warmer at the doubling point, which could likely come by the end of this century. We know a world 5 degrees hotter than the 1700s would be catastrophic for most living things today. It would drive us towards a mass extinction event that could include our own species. Listening to the experts, one could come away with 3 degrees C warming as a solid, safe number. That is what our minds want. Not so long ago, business reports on climate suggested we could settle for 3 or 4 degrees of warming. They said that would have costs, but it would still be affordable for civilization and the gross domestic product wouldn't suffer too badly. No one knows if that is true. Most scientists I speak with doubt the current economy, not to mention the current population, could survive in a 3 degrees C hotter world. But that's just, what the experts think. The planet would be almost unrecognizable. In the last year alone, 2022, the European Alps lost 6% of their snow and ice mass. At 3 degrees C, the Alps and most other mountain systems would be bare, exposing darker surfaces to absorb the energy instead of reflecting it back into space. Great belts of deserts would girdle the world across not just the Middle East and North Africa as now, but much of northern China where the Gobi Desert expands. The southwest United States runs out of water for cities or agriculture. The African desert moves north into southern Europe, into Italy, into Spain. Massive storms might form tracks, just as we saw in California in late 2022 and early 2023. Hurricanes and typhoons may depopulate some Caribbean islands, South Pacific islands. Certainly higher seas would surge ashore. Many of the world's largest ports would be underwater for parts or all of the year. Hundreds of millions of people would have to flee formerly productive delta lands, salted up by the rising seawater in the tables. Burning heat, lasting for a month or three, would make it dangerous to go outside. That planet becomes a lonely place with great vacancies where favored and useful plants grew and insects flew. Breadbasket regions may not produce a surplus for global trade. We have no idea what insects and microbial life will do in response to a hotter world. No idea. Some may multiply out of control, while others go extinct? We depend on those small things for food, even to process the food in our guts. An Earth 3 degrees C hotter, on average, is not a good place for humans. It is a curse to send our grandchildren to hothouse Earth. The IPCC report has one very compelling graphic. It shows the different levels of possible heating according to our emissions path. These are in shades going to red and dark red for the hottest. Then we see three human figures. The first is born in 1950, now 70 years old. Then a person born in 1980, turning 70 in 2050. And finally one born in 2020, turning 70 in the year 2090. On our current course, people born after 1980 experience a hot, disturbed world. Babies born in 2020, if they reach age 70, will live on that different hot planet, a world wildly changed in just three generations. There are signs that people in less developed countries, who are less dependent on the fossil economy, are ready for more climate action. The IPCC summary report makes clear that 10% of wealthy humans are burning more than half the fossil load. The poorest 50% of humans on this planet emit tiny amounts of greenhouse gases. Yet the poorest half will suffer the most from climate damage. They'll have the least capacity for protection or rebuilding. Climate refugee camps will become new slum cities, no doubt. The fall from fossil fuels, it's not so far down for the poorest people. When you have nothing, you have less to lose. How long will the poorest suffer in silence? At least a few children are speaking up, as we see in the school strike for climate movement. Here is the introduction to the We the Children podcast by then 10-year-old Zach Fox DeVol.
Hello, my name is Zachary James. I'm 10 years old and I live in Los Angeles, California. The climate is changing. We are nearing a tipping point, a place from which we cannot turn back, and we are racing towards it at record speeds. We, the children, are being punished for what our ancestors have done to the world and to us. Generations of policymakers and big corporations have made billions at our, the planet's, expense and have escaped consequence. Until now. As our futures are resting upon our shoulders, the shoulders of kids like me, some adults don't even believe in climate change. I'm tired. I'm frustrated. I'm angry. Some days it feels like no one cares. That's why I will put aside my own time when I could be playing with my friends to record this podcast. We need to face the facts. Here, on We the Children, we will be tackling our topics, learning about different climate phenomena, and speaking with experts and leaders in the field of global warming solutions. I may not have all the answers, or be able to solve the world's problems, but at least I know I have to try. And I'm glad you're here to help.
Now at 11, Zach's podcast is totally professional. The kids already know, while we callously demand more of our high fossil fuel lifestyle. We're in danger of becoming fossils, too. I hope to speak with young climate podcaster Zach Fox DeVol in early April. That should be a treat. Seniors in the United States protested continual funding of fossil fuels by major American banks where they have their money. There was a die-in in Washington, D.C., a rocking chair protest, and thousands of bank customers threatened to withdraw if fossil funding continues. A photograph from that D.C. protest, March 31st, 2023, is my theme photo for the Radio EcoShock blog last week. Climate awareness is percolating through all ages, from kids to grandchildren and in between. There is still some sanity out there. A new and better collective illusion could happen. It is not likely from what we see now. It is possible, and as Zach tells us, we have to try and keep on trying. From the famous farm in Tennessee, that visionary holdover from the 1970s, environmental lawyer Albert Bates told us, "If the boat is sinking and I have a can to bail water, I will keep on bailing." I'm Alex Smith. Keep on with Radio EcoShock.
starting